From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to another exciting edition of the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
Namaste. And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. Welcome to the show. And together, we are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. Part of me still wants to say Pac-12 football. Big Ten football, one of the greatest college football weekends we've had in a while.
Since last week.
Pretty amazing stuff we got to get to with, of course, the Oregon-Ohio State game, but a lot of ranked teams in very close games. I think three or four of them went into overtime. Lots of fun stuff. We got a fun show for you today. We got a bunch of emails that have come in. If you have questions for us, Big10cast@gmail.com. You can call or text us at 424-532-0678. And we love giving away Trader Joe's gift cards. And how you can get one is by leaving us a 5-star rating and funny review over on the Apple podcasting app. If you got Spotify, leave us a 5-star review there too. Five-star rating, they don't have reviews, at least to my knowledge. If that's changed, let us know. But for Apple, what we're doing is giving away $17 Trader Joe's gift cards to the best review of the week. Thanks to our buddy John and Brea over there at Trader Joe's. Do we have any? I think we do have the recap show, right?
Yes, we do.
Do we have any new ones?
We have two new ones. So okay. It'll be a very easy pick.
Oh, nice.
Or it won't be. Who knows? This is from 4 Emmett. Woods versus Riley. Listening to Lincoln Riley break down what happened in a game and listening to Dave Woods makes me want to give Woods the head coaching job. I guarantee you that Woods can do an autopsy on a football game infinitely better and more articulately than LR. Woods seems to understand football better than most anyone save Nick Saban. Get him a headset and give him the head coaching job at USC or UCLA.
He's got the headset on now.
I've got a headset.
Yeah, so we just need the job.
Yeah, I just need the job. I would accept it. I would be a massive failure, but I would make many millions of dollars.
We were doing the show last night, and I think my intern Jack was like, and there's a lot of fans that want to fire Lincoln Riley. He's got like more than 7 years left on some $100 million contract. And his response, one of the things was, well, and you're only year two and a half in. If you fire the guy, is the next guy going to be worried that if you get a 10-year contract, he'll be fired? I'm like, that would be freaking awesome.
Yeah,
like
that's not a worry. No, that's a perk.
Then you got like $70 million in the bank. Like yeah. You just walk away for not working. So.
Well, this is why we're not head coaches of football teams, because we don't have the same brain problem, right?
No,
normal person, oh, you're going to give me a 10-year guaranteed contract for like $100 million, and if I fail, you're just going to buy me out of it? Okay, sign me up. Yeah. But like these guys get mad about it, and it's like,
yeah, Jimbo Fisher, man, you get to walk away. You don't have to deal with recruiting or anything. And you get $76 million. And you'll
just be like one of the richest people in the world.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Let's see.
We got another one.
Max says, David, I was 10 feet away from Edwards Kelly. I said hi to him and sent your best regards.
Thanks, Max.
That's good.
Appreciate it. This is from J.L. Carey, Big Ten first year. As we reach midseason, what are your outlooks for both teams you cover to finish the year? Travel has been a grind for most teams. Between Ohio State, OC Chip, and UCLA, looks like tough sledding for Dave. Thanks for the show. Well, that's just the question.
Oh, yeah.
So which one's our pick here?
I think the first one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, delusional.
Yeah.
But maybe tongue-in-cheek.
Yes.
So we'll take it. For Emmett.
Yeah.
Send us your address.
For Emmett, yeah. Email me, ryan@uscfootball.com. I will send you $17 Trader Joe's gift card. Why $17? Because UCLA scored 17 points against LSU.
As for our outlooks for the rest of the season, I think UCLA has a chance in two more football games to play a close game.
Yeah, I think AP said, let me, along those lines, in the chat, where we're live on YouTube, by the way. Oh, no, I'm sorry, the wrong one pulled up there. But AP said, now that UCLA looks like they can win a game, does Foster get a little more heat if they don't win two or three more games? But anyway, yeah, they look like they can win a game. We'll get into that. So I'm sure we'll get your thoughts.
Yeah, you will.
For USC, like, they've lost three close games. They probably outplayed everybody on their schedule, but they're 3-3. They're 1-3 in the Big Ten. Their LSU win's still looking good. LSU's 5-1. They just beat Ole Miss. It looks like they have the talent and that they're better on defense and all that stuff, but they lose games at the end. So the schedule doesn't look very tough going forward. We'll see how good Nebraska is. Maryland's pretty bad, but you got to go all the way east this week. So we'll see. I don't know. I mean, I don't think like 9-3, 8-4 is out of the question. 9-3 would be tough. You have to sweep, but.
Is 6-6 out of the question?
Six and six is also not out of the question.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, how the turntables.
The turntables rotate in a direction.
Oh, buddy. Remember?
Was 6-6 out of the question for UCLA?
Do you remember a few weeks ago when you were like, Dave, they're already halfway to your 6-6 prediction. Yeah. And then
we're still halfway.
And then what happened?
UCLA is like 1/6 of the way to your prediction, I think.
Look, we're not here to talk about that. We're here to joke about USC among friends.
They're probably – I'm still – like I was like 8-3, 9-4 to start.
All right. When USC fails, it's funny. When UCLA fails, it's sad. You know? like when USC goes like 6-6 and everyone thought they were a playoff contender, it's like, oh, we can all bask in the joy of this. Yes, USC fans are angry. Everyone else is joyful. When UCLA goes potentially 2-10 or 1-11, like it's just going to be – what is this? What happened? What is this thing? Like, nobody wants this. Nobody wants this.
Like, 2-10 and 3-9 is kind of sad, but 1-11 is special.
1-11 is special.
Yeah, so we need the 1-11.
I can't say that for professional purposes, but that would be much more of a superlative thing happening.
Gotcha. Okay, a couple things before we jump into all our recaps. Thanks again to Matthew. The Survivor Pool got a little spicy this weekend. 252 original entries. 17 entered week 7 with a chance to win. There are only 5 remaining. Back to the bloodbath. All but one loser, this is from Matthew, had either Maryland to win or Northwestern to lose, or both, which is at least a good strategy. One person had Washington to win and Penn State to lose, a rare 2-game wipeout. 4 of the 5 survivors picked Illinois to win and Purdue to lose. The pool could easily be over right now. The last remaining survivor picked Minnesota to win and USC to lose. Sometimes things just barely go right in LA. Among the 5 survivors, 8 teams still have not yet pick to lose. Still not yet been picked to lose. While Minnesota and Purdue are no longer available, 3 teams are still available, all survivors, as a future winning pick: Iowa, Oregon, UCLA. While Indiana and Michigan State are no longer available. So anyway, we got 5 left, and you're gonna get a Trader Joe's gift card for sure. Top, what do we say? Top 2 or 3 or something, or like I don't know.
Yeah, let's go top 3.
Okay, top 3.
Yeah.
We've only got 5 left. So that's pretty cool. And I do want to thank our sponsor, MyBookie. We're going to get into our picks later. And David can smile. Like, there's only one way, if you go 2-5 in your picks, you can smile, is if your opponent goes 1-6.
Look.
And that's what happened this week. Look, we only picked one wrong.
Some of us are better than others. Yeah. And it's fair to acknowledge that at this point.
Yeah, we were dreadful. Where is it?
They were ferocious.
Yeah, very, very ferocious. But don't discourage you. You can pick against us over at MyBookie. So if you use the promo code, so go to MyBookie. We've been using them for years. Use promo code POC, and they will match your initial deposit. So if you put in $100, you'll get $200 to play with. Bet against our picks if you want to. You can do that. I had a bad week. But in general, I've been good. I'm 40-32-1 overall.
Your math has been screwed up because you have yourself as 40-32-1, which is 73 games, and you have me as 34-37-1, which is 72 games.
Okay, so we'll look at from the last. Yeah. We'll fix that over. But I am several games above 500. Now David is 3 games below 500. So, correct. You know, whoever you want to go with.
Yeah, just pick one. I mean, I think it's fair to pick either one. You just got to pick one.
But go with it, and you can get your initial deposit matched over at MyBookie with the promo code POC. You can even use the old promo code PAC12. Still dear to our hearts, we want to use that one. But POC for the Podcast of Champions, go check it out over at MyBookie. Man, it was a fun, exciting weekend. If you got in there, you like college football, heck, you got the baseball playoffs going on, NFL is in full swing, basketball and hockey are starting. So many things. It's a great time of year for sports. So if you want to get over to MyBookie, again, use promo code POC, because you can bet anything, anytime, anywhere, only at MyBookie.
Beautiful read.
Thanks. I'll have to figure out the math on that one. I just did something wrong. But yeah, our picks were pretty bad. I don't know. We'll get into all the games and stuff. I mean, some of them were like, okay, the spread was 5 and it was a 3-point game. I mean, they were like close. And then some were just like Wally. Like,
so
just,
we had the braggadocious, and now we have the explaining away a bad week. We had the, oh, I went 6-1 or whatever it was. And now it's, oh, but here's the reason I went 1.
No. I mean, there was lucky ones in the, it was 7-1, by the way, so not as bad. But there were some lucky games in there. And there were some unlucky ones.
Yeah, and then there was Northwestern beating the hell out of Maryland by 27 points. And
you're like, Northwestern has a pulse? Northwestern has a pulse. That's good. Okay, so let's get into, we have our power rankings for both the Big Ten and the mythical Pac-12 ones we'll get to a little bit later. We're going to count down from 18-1 and recap all of the games. So we have at number 18...
UCLA Bruins.
Wow.
And they were hosting our number 12 team,
Minnesota Golden Gophers.
This was the nightcap.
Minnesota came to town and beat UCLA 21-17. It was, after Hawaii, definitely the most competitive game UCLA has played this season. I'll start with the good stuff for both teams. I thought Max Brosmer played a pretty good game because UCLA did a mostly good job of taking away the run game. Mostly did a great job of taking away Darius Taylor in their passing game. They love to throw it to the running back. And until very late, they didn't have many opportunities to do so because UCLA kept engaging him as a blocker by sending pressure. And so he could never release or not regularly release for pass attempts out of the backfield. So that was a good game from Brosmer because he had to play a good game with UCLA kind of mixing things up and making it a challenge for him to complete some of his bread and butter stuff. Daniel Jackson for Minnesota is a freak show. He caught a bunch of very well-covered throws. He's a really good player.
He's really good. I got to see him the week before.
He's been a really good player for a long time, but you know, if you haven't watched a lot of Minnesota football, he's a really good player. And them scoring the winning touchdown with him off the field was some impressive play calling, aided, of course, by UCLA's timeout usage. and then defensively, you know, Minnesota's rush defense has been pretty bad this year.
Yeah.
UCLA's run game has also been very bad this year. And the way this game was, you were kind of wondering which one's going to break. And it was very much UCLA's running game. Minnesota was able to shut it down completely. UCLA was able to get nothing on the ground, which was significant. But on the flip side, UCLA, and this is the positive for UCLA, actually got some work done in the pass game, which was not expected because Minnesota's pass defense had been very good coming into this game. Yeah,
Chase Garbers started.
Ethan.
I'm sorry, Ethan Garbers. Sorry.
Yeah. No, we've always got Chase Garbers on the brain here on the POC.
Yeah.
Cal great, Chase Garbers, best quarterback in the league.
MVP.
Yeah, Ethan Garbers started, and he looked pretty mobile. He threw 3 picks. One was on a game-ending Hail Mary attempt, which whatever. The other two were either tipped or nearly tipped balls, where the first one was completely tipped and it was just tipped at the line of scrimmage and then landed in the waiting arms of, I think, a linebacker. And the second one, there was heavy pressure. I couldn't tell if it was tipped or not, but there was heavy pressure and he threw it to a diving corner. But I thought he played a pretty good game, actually, aside from those, and they were significant. But it was, it was not an interesting game. Like, it was pretty boring, I think, for a lot of it. Like, this was 7-0 for a huge amount of the time. Like, it felt like it was 7-0 for an eternity. And UCLA was able to shut out Minnesota in the first half. And then the second half, Brosmer, and they kind of adjusted some things and were able to get a little bit more going offensively, aided by some short fields from UCLA. I mostly want to talk about the end of this game and the end of the first half. UCLA sacked Max Brosmer with about a minute and a half left on the clock at the end of the first half. It was at the Minnesota 33. They sacked him with 1:44 left, actually. They have a timeout. They don't call it. Minnesota then drains the clock to 58 seconds, calls its own timeout, and then punts the ball away. This is at like about, I don't know, you know, a little bit short of midfield. So you're expecting you'll get the ball at the 20. If you're going to get the ball at the 20, you would like to have more time on the clock than what ended up happening, which is about 45 seconds.
Makes sense, yeah.
They chose not to do that. But then they successfully drive it down to the Minnesota red zone. But they end up having to kick a field goal on 3rd and 10 because they don't have enough time to continue to take shots at the end zone. Just a blunder. Like, I'm not saying you're going to get a touchdown. I'm not even saying if you
want to give yourself a chance.
I'm not even saying if you have more time, you're going to even drive into field goal range again. You can't do those counterfactuals. But if you're trying to maximize your point opportunities, you've got to call that timeout. That's a blunder that I don't think anybody makes that blunder. So that's crazy. And then end of game, and this is where it gets a little bit more nuanced, but I thought there were two major errors. One was UCLA got the ball back after PJ Fleck, I thought, made a huge mistake, which was punting it away on 4th and 6 from the UCLA 47 with about 2 minutes and 53 seconds.
You love people punting in opposing territory.
Down by three, I thought that was a mistake. And then the Big Ten caught up with me. UCLA decided to be as Big Ten as possible, and they ran the ball twice. And again, to that point, I think they had run for a total of 34 yards on 16 carries. I think that's the math, on 16 running back carries. So there was no expectation with those two plays that they were going to get a first down.
Okay.
They were running it from their own three. They got about 3 or 4 yards. No, 2 yards. 2 yards total on those runs. Then they dump it off to Maliki Matavao, who gets it almost to the first down marker. It's 4th and 1 at about the UCLA 12. There's about 2 minutes and 20 seconds left in the game. They choose to punt it away. Now, here's the problem there.
Okay.
If they go for it, which is greater than a 50-50 proposition on 4th and 1, like, you just steamroll ahead.
Yeah.
Like, you do the tush push. You do whatever you need to do. But it's like
it works a
greater than 50% chance that you're going to get it. And once you get it, the game is over, because Minnesota has used all of its timeouts while you were doing the running the ball and then jumping it off to Matavao. So once you get it past that, so it's a greater than 50% chance to win the game right then. Instead, they punt it away.
Yeah.
And then Minnesota drives it down. Now, Minnesota gets it within UCLA's 10 with a 1st and goal at the 9 with about a minute and change to go. UCLA has 3 timeouts. Ryan, do they call any of those timeouts?
I don't think they did.
No. When the clock is running, they do not call any timeouts. They drain it down to about 28 seconds left, or 32 seconds left. Then Deshaun Foster calls a timeout on a dead ball, allowing Minnesota to set up that play to Darius Taylor.
But you saved time, right? Because you called time.
No, because the clock wasn't running.
Oh, yeah, you should call it when the clock's running.
Correct.
Oh,
correct.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. See, I got to figure this stuff out.
And so then there were 27 seconds left on the clock for UCLA to do a full field drive for a touchdown.
Yeah.
They didn't do a full field
drive. It did not? No.
No, they didn't. They ended up with a Hail Mary from the 50.
Derek says, Deshaun Foster reminds me of Carl Durrell standing stoic on the sidelines for the whole game with a deer in headlights look. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into like how somebody looks on the sidelines, because, you know, I think I would look like a deer in headlights. I might be crying at some point. I don't know. but I will say it's these game management errors keep happening and they're not improving. And this is the with a head coach during the game, if you're not handling one side of the ball or the other, the main demand on you is to manage the game appropriately.
Yes.
And, you know, hype up if you're one of the hype guys or whatever. He's clearly not. But, like, if you're going to be in that role, like, you've got a lot of responsibilities pregame. You've got a lot of responsibilities postgame. But during the game, if you've got coordinators handling each side of the ball, your job is to make sure that game management is more or less flawless. You know, right. And that's getting guys in on time, but that's also just making sure your timeout usage is correct, all this stuff. And he's not doing it, and he's not getting any better. And it's extremely frustrating in this game in particular because UCLA very much was in position to win. The players largely played pretty well. I mean, yes, within the bounds of, you know, we're doing comparative advantage here. We're doing relativity, but it's they played pretty well for what this team is. And they were let down again by just major preventable errors.
Did you see the Brett McMurphy tweet? I don't know if you heard about this, but apparently...
I'm the one who tweeted it out originally.
Oh, I didn't see it. Yeah. Did you? Okay, yeah. Okay, so what's going on?
All right. So this is... we're hoping to get some answers this week. UCLA, the injury report that showed up on the Big Ten website had...
And we look for this like hour or two before kickoff.
2 hours before game. Yeah. I'm constantly refreshing the thing because I want to post it.
Yeah.
And it's... UCLA receiver Titus Mokiau-Atamalava is out. And so you write your little story and you put it out there. And then he's playing in the first half. Caught a ball, caught a couple balls. So I tweeted out, hey, this guy was listed as out and he's playing. And then one of my colleagues on the beat, Tracy McDonald, he asks the UCLA SID and they say the Big Ten posted last week's report. And they did it for Minnesota as well. But that's not true because Minnesota's report was different from the previous week. So the only one that was actually the same as the previous week was UCLA's. So it could just be a clerical
Big
error.
Big Ten clerical error.
Okay. It could be UCLA submitted the wrong report. I'm willing to grant the grace that it was probably not intended to be nefarious, but some error was made here.
Gotcha. Yeah, that was interesting. UCLA showed a little spunk. We have people in the chat arguing they shouldn't be the cellar dweller. And I don't know. We'll have to see. Because our number 17 team.
Purdue Boilermakers.
Do we think this is fair?
I don't know. They were on the road taking on our number, what do we have them at? Number 7 team.
Illinois Fighting Illini.
Hi, I'm from Illinois.
So, wow.
Was the spread in this one? Oh, by the way, we both took Minnesota. They won by
four and it was a five. Win by six or something.
Five. We had five. Yeah. So we just got that one barely wrong.
Yeah. Well, UCLA, we should always remember they're going to.
They played a cover. Yeah.
Illinois, they won.
Yeah, this was a 19-point spread.
Yes, they won. They won by one in overtime.
50-49. This made me feel Pac-12-y.
Yeah, this was very Pac-12-y. This, I feel like we've seen this Pac-12 game many times because it was Illinois was up by 21 points at halftime.
Yeah,
and then
we were covering.
It felt like there was some relaxation.
Yeah,
it felt like, okay, we're good.
But if you wanted a Pac-12 game where you're going to expect it was Purdue-Illinois that you get it in, like, no. But that's where we got it.
Yeah, that is exactly where we got it. It was a lot of fun. Overtime basically ended because Purdue went for two to try to end the game in overtime.
Did you like that?
I liked going for two. I did not like what ended up happening when they went for two. The guy got dropped for, I think it was a 20-yard sack, and it's just like, buddy, you just got to throw it. You just got to throw it up there and hope for the best, but you can't.
You're not playing to like, get into field goal range.
Like, as you're falling down, just throw it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, throw that pick, whatever.
Kick it, whatever. Like, I mean, anything.
Literally anything would have been fine instead of that. And it marred what was like an epic comeback for Purdue. I mean, look, Illinois, I think, relaxed, obviously, but at the same time, Purdue maybe found a little bit of something because Illinois' defense has been pretty solid this year.
Yeah, they.
I mean, Purdue scored 40 points in the second half of this game.
It was insane.
So, I mean, I think if you're Purdue, it feels very deeply disappointing that you didn't come away with a win here. But maybe a little spark of something on offense. Maybe they found something. Or yeah. maybe it was simply that Illinois, you know, relaxed into some zone and let them just kind of march down the field. Hard to say. For Illinois, I don't know how much you take from it. I think it was kind of classic stuff where it's hard to maintain a team's intensity, their emotional, you know, kind of locked in-ness week in and week out. And in game, if you already know you've got an overmatched opponent and you go up huge in the first half, really hard to keep everyone locked in and engaged. I think this will, it being a win, will allow it to be a good lesson for them going forward. If this had been a loss, it would have been, I think, extremely demoralizing.
I mean, I don't think Illinois can feel good coming out of this one. Like I wrote down, it was halftime. So I'm in the press box, like kind of watching this on the iPad. Luke Altmyer, 215 yards passing at halftime. It was his career high. It's 24-3. We're like 19 points cover. Okay, you're already covering by halftime. This feels good. But then, you know, it's college football. It's crazy. Like if you're just watching and you just see some of the stuff that's happening, momentum is such a big part of this game. And it was amazing how much the momentum went towards Purdue. And Illinois was still scoring and stuff, but it became like this. It was like this, you were this mountain that you couldn't overcome. I think the sack return for a touchdown by Purdue sort of like regenerate. I think that made it 27-17. So then it's like, you know, Purdue had scored, but then you get the sack, fumble, touchdown, and it's like, okay, this is a whole deal. And then towards the end, Purdue was going for two and getting it, and Illinois was going for two and not getting it. They did an onside kick after, you know, cutting it to 3 points, and they recover the onside kick, and then they get the field goal, and it's like going to overtime. Like, so many things had to happen for Purdue to be in this spot, and for the one play, a two-point conversion that Purdue had converted a couple of times earlier, if I'm not mistaken, and it was a disastrous play, but for Illinois to be one play away from, like, losing that game, you have to be, like, pulling your hair out. Like, how did this happen? But it was so much – it was just so crazy of a game that so many things went wrong for Purdue early, like, normal. Like, the whole season's been, like, crap. And then the second half, for whatever reason, like, light shined upon them, and it was like, oh, this is going to work. It was one of the crazier games. Like, it's not going to get the credit, but it's a ranked team, overtime, one-point game. Pretty crazy. But Purdue showed some life. So the people are saying UCLA should be 17 – I think Purdue's pretty safe where they are. I think UCLA's still the bottom, but
yeah, UCLA's definitely still the bottom. Yeah. Again, until they win a game, they are the bottom.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. But both teams had chances to win these games, so they both had a chance to get out of the cellar. But Purdue's second half comeback was pretty insane.
Yep.
Okay, we got our number 16 team. Where is it? Here we go.
Maryland Terrapins.
And they were hosting our now number 14 team. Where are they? Okay.
Northwestern Wildcats.
Man. First, it might be a little unfair to have Maryland down here, but you just lost at home to Northwestern, and you lost at home to Michigan State. So that's two bottom half teams.
You haven't won a Big Ten game.
Won a Big Ten game, so... whatever might have happened in non-conference play, it's been...
Plus, you didn't cover Maryland. You were an 11-point favorite and got...
and you got curb stomped. Northwestern
so,
won.
So you should make... I mean, we could put them below. We could put them... they, in the old days...
this would be an 18.
This would be an 18 team. Yeah.
Yeah. Northwestern won 37-10. And it was never, like, in doubt.
No.
No. From the opening snap, it felt like, oh, Northwestern came to play.
It was like Northwestern from last year more.
Jack Lausch, dude had a game. It's not, it doesn't show up in the stats. He was 10 of 18 throwing it, and he only had 8 carries for 24 yards. But it felt like every time they needed a play, he was there to, like, scramble for something or just get it closer and then, you know, dump something off. I mean, he played a really, really, really good and efficient game. Had almost 12 yards per attempt throwing the ball. Like, this was not a, like, great offensive performance, but for Northwestern, it was a fantastic offensive performance against what should be a decent enough defense for Maryland. And on the other side, I mean, this was a really good defensive performance. They forced Billy Edwards, who's been really efficient this year, into a really inefficient performance. And they shut down that running game. Like, this was never in doubt. Like, no. Once you got to halftime and it was 17-7, you're like, oh, maybe Maryland can put something together. But it's like, only if Northwestern stops playing like this, because if Northwestern continues to play like this, it's not going to be close. And that's what ended up happening. Really impressive game for Northwestern. They are very clearly not the 17th or 18th best team in this league.
Yeah, this was a weird one, too. Northwestern hadn't scored a touchdown in the first quarter against any FBS opponent all season. Obviously, they do against Maryland. This was a blackout game for Maryland. And if you looked at the stands, I don't know. I don't think the weather was terrible or anything, but there was not a lot of people there. This was a Friday night game. Maryland didn't, I mean, just the crowd didn't seem excited for this one. It was very strange. You know, you're not playing it like Northwestern with on the lake with 17,000 people there, but there might've only been 17,000 people in the stands. I don't know, I have to see what the attendance was, but it just didn't, it looked really weird. Maryland had a series where they're first and goal at the one, you know, and they end up kicking a 31-yard field goal. Like, that's the kind of stuff that was happening where they just couldn't get out of their own way. They couldn't figure anything out. Nothing worked. They had only turned the ball over three times all season, and they had four in this game. So it's just one of those, like, sometimes it's one of those nights where nothing's going right. Like, nothing was going right. Friday night football can be weird. Northwestern came in and they looked like they were like eyes dotted, T's crossed, ready to go. We're going to do it. And Maryland looked like they literally just woke up and it's like, oh crap, I got a final and I'm hungover kind of thing. Yeah. It was just like, I don't know what it was, but it's just, they were not prepared for this game.
They just did not look prepared to play.
No.
And that's, I mean, that cost them majorly. I mean, they scored 10 points. 10.
They were favored by 11, and they scored 10.
I mean, and yes, they missed a field goal. Yes, they turned it over on downs at one point, but like...
And they had first and goal of the one and didn't...
And didn't make a touchdown.
You know, it's like, okay. Very concerning for Maryland.
Yes. Yes, I would be very concerned if I was Maryland, but you get a reprieve this week.
Yeah.
You get a West Coast team traveling in.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Number 15, we have...
Michigan State Spartans.
Charge!
And they were on a bye. 14, we talked about Northwestern. Number 13.
USC Trojans.
And they were hosting now number 3.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
Now, is this unfair having USC at 13? They showed, I mean, real pluckiness. Like these plucky upstarts almost took down Penn State at home. And yes,
they had a 14-point lead at halftime. Yes.
Yes, some of it was probably Penn State not taking them seriously and all of that. But for USC to show that kind of fight, that kind of mettle, I mean, these gutty little Trojans.
You are what your record is, and USC's 1-3 in the
conference.
Big Ten.
Yeah. That's right. And they're 3-3 overall. A lot to talk about in this game. So USC was up 20-6. The defense was playing a really, really good game early. And the offense was doing enough. Woody Marks.
They ran the ball well.
Woody Marks is a stud. Hey, they did run the ball well. How many runs did they have in the third quarter?
Not a lot. Yeah. I think they ran for 189 yards. Like, I don't think Penn State's given up that many rushing yards in like 3 years.
So yeah.
USC like ran on them.
Yeah, USC ran all over them and then just decided to stop, weirdly enough, which was interesting. I'm actually going to pull up a stat here because I want to find this information out. So in the third quarter, they ran 5 times for 10 yards. In every other quarter, they ran for well over 30 yards minimum.
Yeah,
they should have run the ball more. Anyway, that allowed, I think, in large part, Penn State to get back into this game. I think Penn State made some adjustments offensively.
Yeah.
They were able to...
they scored like the first two touchdowns, the first two drives of the second half.
And then USC was going very inefficient on offense. They were not able to score. They were not able to keep pace with that. And so it turned it into a nail biter, and it was going to go one way or the other at the end. And so this is where we were talking before the show, because... This is going to sound crazy coming from me, but I'm not as upset with Lincoln Riley's timeout usage at the end of this game. So Penn State goes down, scores. It's 30-30, and it's going to go to overtime unless one of these two teams scores. USC gets the ball back with a little over 2 minutes to go, I think.
Yeah. There was like 2:40. They get two first downs and cross midfield. So it's like, I think it's a minute 45, and you have first and 10 with three timeouts.
I don't hate not calling a timeout there once you get the first down, because it's first down, the clock stopped, you're fine. You're not losing a ton of time there. Then they get dropped for a loss. Now, this is the point where I think the argument is he should have called timeout at that point, like once they get dropped for the two-yard loss.
Yeah, like kind of regroup or whatever.
The problem with that is if you call timeout and they just dropped you for a loss, right? So they've got a bead on whatever you're doing to some extent. If you call a timeout, you may be aiding them because it's not as if USC was going full juggernaut style in the second half here. They scored 10 total points.
Yeah.
So decent chance that they're going to stop you, right? So if you call timeout there, so I think if that had been a positive play, maybe you do it. Maybe if they go 5 yards, you know, it's second and five, then maybe you call timeout. But it's second and 12 then. Then they get 6 yards. I'm not calling timeout on third and six from the Penn State, whatever, 40-something. Because, again, if you get stopped there, they're going to get the ball back with a lot more time. What I think the error was, actually, was James Franklin not calling a timeout quicker on third down, because he only ended up calling it, I think, with 14 seconds to go.
Yeah, and then, yes.
And then got the pick. But you call timeout there, James, and you get the ball with 30-plus seconds left, and then you might actually have a chance to win it in regulation. So I think there was a timeout error here, but I think it was more on Penn State. But I could go either way on both decisions. I don't think it was decisive. I don't think it was Deshaun Foster not calling timeouts.
Yeah, I was.
But I thought it was more an error of Penn State's.
Yeah, I mean, Lincoln Riley explained that once they got the negative play, I wanted to see, you know, you have the ball, you're an offensive guy, be more aggressive. And I felt like the offense got out of sorts by just sitting there waiting, and then you're relying on Moss ends up throwing a pick. He had Deuce Robinson open for a slant, overthrew him. It gets picked off. But I felt like you sort of took – they had picked up two first downs, and then you kind of like – just because they had one negative run, you sort of killed the momentum of the drive, self-inflicted. That's just the feeling I got. But
you know what the main self-inflicted issue was, though, for me with USC? They decided not to cover that tight end. And if they had just covered him, I think they would have had a better chance for winning.
So Tyler Warren was an absolute stud. If you remember USC and Dalton Kincaid a couple years ago, he had 16 catches on 16 targets. Warren, in this one, had 17 catches, so it's an all-time record for a USC opponent. 224 yards, something like that, and a touchdown. He lined up, snapped the ball on one play, was like the eligible receiver still at the end of the line. And then Drew Aller hit him for a touchdown, contested catch in the end zone. He makes it. He was an absolute stud. There was a couple coverage busts where he was wide open. He was amazing. But, you know, Penn State normally runs the ball well. USC pretty much shut it down. Penn State stops the run. USC ran the ball on him. Penn State gets after the quarterback. USC protected Miller Moss. It was a really weird game. Like, the stuff that you thought you knew going in sort of played out differently. But I think in the end, you know, Drew Aller throws three picks. One of them was a Hail Mary.
He had three total picks in his college career.
And he throws three picks in this game, which is crazy. But he made, on their final drive, two fourth and long conversions. Yeah. One with, he had pressure in his face. The fourth and seven from your own side of the field with timeouts and a lot of time left, I don't know if Penn State should have went for that one. Seemed a little desperate. I don't know what you thought about that one. But
a little desperate, but I was fine with it. I'm generally fine with fourth down, even if it's aggressive and it's bad math, I'm kind of okay with it because it at least
you'd rather be on that side of it.
Yeah,
but Drew Aller made those plays. Like he.
If you're going to make mistakes through aggression. Don't make it through passivity.
Right. I felt like USC was passivity. The passivity factor was high on their final drive, and I mean it come down to USC got two interceptions that brought you into field goal range. And they didn't go anywhere on either of those drives, just end up kicking a field goal. And, you know, you have that drive, you're at midfield with a minute 45 left. All you need is points and you win the game, and they didn't do anything. So I felt like USC was too passive in those situations. But Penn State, probably couldn't have played much worse in the first half, and then they came out and played a lot better. They showed a lot. I mean, I look at this team. We've dropped them from two behind Oregon, Ohio State, because I think both of those teams look better. But Penn State, I think, showed a lot. And Drew Aller, who last year, if you watched him, was sort of just not doing much. He's throwing the ball down the field more. He made critical plays, converting 2 fourth and longs on that final drive when you need to. I was really impressed with him. So he's looked like he's a much better quarterback. And that was a big one for Penn State to get over the hump. It's like playoffs or bust for James Franklin. And this was a huge step towards, like, I don't think this team's going to beat like Ohio State or anything, but I think it was a big step towards, you know, this is going to be a playoff looking
team.
It's
a very solid ass team. One thing that I thought for Penn State early on, and this has been kind of an ongoing concern throughout the season, is what can they do at receiver? Because they've got a really good tight end. They've got really good running backs, but the receiver position, they just haven't had a number one guy step up. And there was some thinking preseason, you know, Julian Fleming from Ohio State, but he had like no chemistry with Drew Aller. It seems like every time they're like trying to connect on something, he's running it too short, or Aller misses him, or it hits Fleming in the hands and he drops it. But he made 2 big catches in the second half in this game, contested tough catches. Maybe that sparked something for him. Like, that'd be really good, I think, for them. They need somebody. So, it can't, like, the ways they have to be creative to continue to get Tyler Warren the ball, if they just had somebody who could be super consistent catching, you know, 10-yard passes on the outside, whether that's Fleming or Wallace or whatever, but the Fleming showing a little bit of life in the second half, I thought was potentially a good sign for them.
Yeah.
Because he's been so, just seemingly so out of sorts in this offense. So I thought that was nice to see. And then, but USC's defense, I mean, I think for Danton Lynn, the big thing to remember is when you're coaching against Penn State, cover the tight end who catches everything and cover the running back who's really fast out of the backfield.
Yeah.
If you don't cover the running back who's really fast out of the backfield, what happens, Ryan? He scores a game-tying touchdown.
And he was lined up at the tight end spot in that situation.
Yeah, but you know his number doesn't change.
Right.
So if you've got, say, like a, I don't know, a fast guy on defense, let's call him a safety, right? Say his name's Kamari Ramsey, maybe, right? Just have him cover that guy.
Right.
Right? Or, I mean, have another guy do it. Have Kamari Ramsey cover the tight end guy who's 44. His number doesn't change either. And have somebody else who's fast on your defense cover the number 10 guy out of the backfield.
Tyler Warren being number 44, like, we cover a lot of football. Yeah. And, you know, you're watching practice and stuff. And then say someone's, like, at practice next to you and some, like, number four, we're watching, like, a football practice. You're at UCLA or whatever. And, like, number 44 makes, like, a nice catch. And the guy next to you goes, oh, who's number 44? Most of the time your answer is, it doesn't matter. He's a walk-on. Like, that's not, like, he's inconsequential to the he doesn't matter. He's like on the scout team.
And then at the end.
In this case, you're like, look at number 4. Like, holy cow, he's making every freaking play.
Yeah, and I do think it was very cool. USC missing the field goal. Their kicker's pretty good. Just, it happens. But Penn State's kicker, former walk-on, who took over that job last week, because the scholarship guy they had, I think he's a scholarship guy, he was not performing well at all. That kid comes in, kicks a game-winning field goal. Now, do we hate James Franklin for not going for a touchdown there and covering? Yes.
Again, all these situations we could have covered, we did not cover.
But setting up and then having faith in that kid to make the field goal, I thought was a cool moment, even though I don't think it was like the ideal percentage play. You still want to score that touchdown.
Yeah.
Being able to, you know, make that, I think, was a really cool moment for him.
And Andy Kotelnicki, the new offensive coordinator for Penn State, comes over from Kansas. Obviously, very creative. I think he's made a huge difference. I think
that play where Warren snaps the ball, like, it was well covered.
Insane.
USC actually covered.
They were
it
there,
well,
yeah.
But snaps the ball and then goes down and catches the touchdown was insane. That was an insane play.
Yeah.
That was the product of a deranged mind.
There were some actually fun creative calls. Like, there's a good Woody Marks run where he kind of faked pitching it back to Miller Moss and took off. And the first touchdown.
Wait, wasn't that Quentin Joyner?
No, that was Quentin Joyner's touchdown was a fake reverse to Zachariah Bryce.
That was a really pretty play.
That was a really nice looking play. There were some fun, good offense in this game.
Both guys going in their bag. It was nice.
Yeah, it was cool to see. Big win for Penn State. They were fired up about this. Okay, number 12, we've talked about Minnesota. Number 11.
Washington Huskies.
They went on the road to take on number 6.
Iowa Hawkeyes.
All right, I don't want to belabor this one. Washington got the shit kicked out of them, and Iowa's really good.
This was not close.
Iowa's really good at home. But how does Jonah Coleman only carry the ball 9 times in this game?
He's really good.
He had 9 carries for 80 yards. They threw the ball 50 times. What the hell is going on?
I don't know.
Is he hurt? I don't think he's hurt.
We were very high on Washington last week.
Yeah.
Taking care of business against Michigan, and then they just go out and get...
I mean, Caleb Johnson, when Iowa remembers they have Caleb Johnson and they're just like, no, we're going to run it more with him than we throw it ever, they're really good. I mean, like, it's... Their defense is so strong, so tough to handle, and then, like, that offense isn't special, but when Caleb Johnson can just do Caleb Johnson things... Man, Washington's defense coming into this was pretty good, but they allowed 220 yards on the ground, a couple of touchdowns. Like, this was a full-on beatdown.
Not close.
No other way to put it. I mean, it was only 20-10 at halftime, but 20-10 with Iowa, they're up 3 touchdowns, basically.
I mean, they're favored by less than a field goal, and you just get...
Yeah. I mean, this was, I think, the most disappointing performance, obviously, for Washington this year. You lose 2 close games, and then you just get trucked in this one. I mean, they've got to reimagine what they're trying to do offensively. I know some of it was being down, but they weren't down huge until very late in this game. How do you not run the ball more?
I don't get it. I said, you know, if you give up 40 points to Iowa, you need to be relegated. But Iowa at home is a different beast. And, Washington showed like, hey, they're turning the corner here the last week and played well against Michigan. And this was not a good one. And another case of teams traveling multiple time zones and failing to win. We didn't bring this up earlier, but the only teams in the Big Ten that have traveled multiple time zones and won have come to Los Angeles. UCLA has lost twice at home to Indiana and Minnesota, and then USC lost to Penn State.
We all know why. Because this is the heart of Big Ten country.
Yes.
And so teams coming here, they feel at home.
100%.
Yeah.
It is a lot easier to fly to Los Angeles than some places too. We'll see if that, but you know, Ohio State could have won that game for sure. We'll talk about that in a little bit. That one, you know, this one where you're like, hey, Washington, we thought they had a real shot to go in there and just they weren't even competitive. On the road at Iowa. And no teams from the West Coast have gone east and won yet. So we'll see if that happens coming forward. But this was a absolute bludgeoning from Iowa. And I don't know, like, what do you make of the Hawkeyes? Like, they're not competitive against Ohio State, but against everyone else, they've been pretty good, you know? Iowa State's undefeated, by the way.
Iowa isn't... like, they're not some offensive juggernaut, but the offense is clearly significantly improved from where it was last year.
I mean,
Caleb Johnson is really, really good. And when you have a really good running back like that, it makes a guy like Cade McNamara look better because suddenly he's not making a ton of third and long throws. He's making third and 2 throws, or he's not having to throw the ball much at all, which he didn't in this game. He threw 14 fucking times. Like, when you've got a running back like that, it can change the game. And so I think for Iowa, they've been a lot, just a lot more sound offensively. And then I know defensively people talk about, their cornerback play, especially early on, wasn't very good, but it's still a very, very good defense. And so you combine those two things, good running game, good defense. I mean, that's been the Iowa formula for many, many years of successful seasons. So I think, you know, that's kind of what we're seeing here. And this game was, it's one that kind of changes the opinion again, because I was going into this one thinking Washington would win, because Washington has been kind of an analytics darling through the early going. But this wasn't a marginal Jed Fish loss, unless you say, you know, they should have been running the ball more. Which they should have been, and maybe that would have changed some of the complexion of this game. This is just a beatdown, and when you get beat down like that, that's just because one team's better than the other.
Yeah, and there was like no question who was better in this one.
Yeah.
But yeah, good win for the Hawkeyes. Again, not the toughest schedule, so getting a win against a Washington team that looked like, hey, maybe they figured some stuff out. I think that means a lot for the Hawkeyes there, so we'll see where they go going forward. All right, our number 10 team.
Rutgers, Scarlet Knights.
Scarlet Knight.
I think they were coming off a bye, right? And they get to host number 8.
Wisconsin Badgers.
They were not coming off a bye. They played Nebraska.
Oh, they played Nebraska. Okay, yeah.
Well, where to
begin? There's a lot of teams to like. Where to begin?
Wisconsin beat.
This was close, right? Was this one of those overtime games? No.
Rutgers was favored by 2.5.
Oh, okay. So.
So it's probably close either way, right?
I would assume it's a 2.5 point spread.
Wisconsin beat the pee out of them. It's 42-7.
Was it at Camp Randall?
No.
Oh, no. Okay.
No, it was at Rutgers. It was a 9 a.m. game. Wow. Wisconsin had 309 rushing yards.
That's a lot. Was Ron Day in there? Like,
Wisconsin also threw the ball well. 28 attempts for 240 yards with Braden Locke. One interception. Okay, so the issues for Rutgers. Ethan Kaliak-Manis has turned back into a pumpkin. Two straight games of...
More Minnesota.
Yeah, really.
What he was last year at Minnesota versus the start of the season.
Really now. Poor play the last 2 weeks. And with that, with him... So Wisconsin did a good job taking away Rutgers' running game in this one. I mean, it's hard to completely take away Kyle Manungai, but 19 carries for 72 yards and a touchdown.
That's not what he... For Rutgers to win, that's not his stat line.
Yeah. And so the ball was put in Kaliak-Manis' hands, and he didn't do much good with it. He threw the ball 32 times for 103 yards and a pick. It's the same thing as Iowa. When you can put him in positive situations with your running game, he can be fine. But when you can't, like when that running game is completely stifled and he is forced to make the throws and he is forced to be the guy, you can't have him making 3rd and 10 throws a lot. You can't have him making 3rd and long throws a lot. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
He doesn't have that skill set. He's not accurate enough, not a good enough decision maker. He can be fine if he's not in obvious passing downs a lot of the time. And that's the problem for Rutgers. And Wisconsin, they're finding something, obviously. Like, they've looked kind of like they're gelling. I mean, we started with the first half of that USC game where it looked like, hey, did they find something here? Then it was, what was it, against Purdue last week, and now Rutgers. They've found something offensively very clearly, and now it's just a matter of putting it together against better teams. But is my dream of Wisconsin being a giant killer still alive?
I mean, it looks way better now than it did the beginning of the season because they look like ass.
They sure did.
And this might be – I put this note down. So the Wisconsin won by 35. They were a 2.5-point dog. So 37.5 points. Like, has anyone beat the spread that badly this year? Has it been – I don't remember. Anyone in the chat remember that. But that's – to be an underdog, a slight underdog, but an underdog, and win by 35. I don't know if we've seen that.
I mean, we saw it on Friday. Northwestern was an 11.5-point underdog and won by 27, so that's 38.5 points.
Wow. Okay, so that is, yeah.
Yeah.
That was a much bigger spread.
Two of these this week.
Insane what was going on there. But you Wisconsin figuring something out. I don't know. Maybe Rutgers is just worse than we thought, but...
I think Wisconsin is finding something. I think Rutgers is what it is. I think they've got a very flawed rush defense. Their pass defense is quite good. And Braden Locke played pretty well, but he did throw a pick. I think for Rutgers, it's not as sound of a defense as last year, and that's maybe their main issue. They just do not... they don't handle the run very well.
Matthew in the chat, he says, as a Wisconsin fan, it's playing the young fickle recruits who fit the system better. So let's see. Let's see if that, you know, pays dividends going forward. But yeah, cool stuff. It was not expected in that one. We actually got this right. This was the one that we both got right. But we thought Wisconsin would go in there, and I did not think they would win by a million, but they ended up doing that. Okay. So congrats there. We have our number 9 team. Where are they?
Michigan Wolverines.
Wow, scratch, 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 scratch.
They were on a bye. We talked about 8 Wisconsin, 7 Illinois. We talked about 6 Iowa. We have them up at number 5 right now. We've got
Nebraska Cornhuskers.
I'm peeling corn.
And they were on a bye. Our number 4 team we have
Indiana Hoosiers.
Hey, folks. I'm from Indiana.
Still on a bye. Still undefeated. Still bowl eligible. Number 3, Penn State, we talked about. And then one more game we need to discuss. We have number 2.
The Ohio State Buckeyes.
And our new number 1 team.
Oregon Ducks.
I'm willing to accept apologies from everyone who's called Lane Danning a moron for his game management. Because this is, he did this against UCLA a couple of years ago, but knowing a game is going to be a back and forth tennis match, right? When you get the ball at the 50 after a 15-yard penalty on a extra point, I think it was, or whatever the hell it was, kicking that onside kick and stealing a possession was absolutely essential to the outcome of this game.
They needed that.
Yeah.
Like, if you just watch the game, it was like, Ohio State's going to win. Like, if there was, like, unlimited possessions, I think Ohio State was going to win.
The man makes positive expected value decisions at a rate that nobody can touch. And it mattered in this game. It stole a possession from Ohio State, and that's absolutely essential. Because I would say Ohio State, analytically and eye test-wise, probably a better team.
Yeah.
They've got more talent. But Oregon's got a better coach. And he made, like, that's what you can get from a head coach who makes positive decisions, who makes an impact on his team positively. And I'm not even saying Ryan Day's a bad coach, but the end game management for Ohio State at the end of this one versus what Oregon was doing.
Yeah.
This was advantage Oregon on the sideline. Advantage Oregon in almost no other facet of this game. And not like it was a huge, you know, huge margin, but Ohio State was more talented.
Yeah.
And so Oregon, I think, got a huge boost from their head coach being a
psycho.
Well, being able to do math. being able to do math is important. Or at least hiring people to do math for you. There was a lot to like for both teams in this game. I mean, I don't look. First, I'm going to start with this.
Seven lead changes is crazy.
It was a lot of fun to watch. Oregon won 32-31. I don't want to pin too much blame on Will Howard for that end game snafu. He scrambled. Ohio State was pseudo in field goal range. Then they got kind of out of field goal range due to a questionable offensive pass interference. And then he scrambled with 6 seconds to go. He thought he was sliding early enough. He may have slid early enough, actually, if you watch the thing. But it's all about timing of the timeout,
yeah.
Whether you get the official's attention at the right time. He probably needed to pull up a little bit earlier. He didn't. And so that's unfortunate. That's, you know, it wasn't a first down, so it wouldn't have stopped the clock on its own. It needed to be a timeout. But it's, you know, you shouldn't be in that position. And there were coaching snafus, not knowing the clock was going to run after the offensive pass interference. And then Dan Lanning. So there's a theory on the Twitter sphere that Dan Lanning intentionally did the 12 men on the field on defense, which would be too galaxy brain for even me to assume that Dan Lanning did on purpose. But if he did, that drained, I think, an additional 5 seconds off the clock and only granted them 5 yards, and their kicker was not good enough to make it from that distance anyway. So if he did that intentionally, that's really impressive.
Yeah.
This was, I thought, a little bit mismanaged by Ohio State at the end. They could have managed that clock a lot better. They didn't, and that more cost them, I think, than Will Howard, you know, having a slight mental error at the end of this game. He played largely a really good game, and, you know,
yeah.
didn't throw any interceptions. I thought, you know, Ohio State could have run the ball a lot more than they did. I think that was, you know, if I'm looking for things that are Chip Kelly-isms that maybe frustrate you if you're an Ohio State fan, it's you got Travion Henderson, and he only has 10 carries, and he's averaging 8.7 yards per carry. I mean,
yeah.
he's a big play waiting to happen when he touches the ball. And yeah, you're going to deal with the occasional 3-yard run, but you're also going to deal with the occasional 50-yard run. So give him the damn ball. But, you know, I mean, it was a really, really fun game. And then on Oregon's side, Dylan Gabriel, his accuracy on the downfield stuff was wildly impressive in this game. And they found some stuff in that Ohio State defense that I think, you know, people were giving me shit for saying, hey, you know, they've played a lot of weak teams, but they're even like Marshall was able to do some stuff early against this Ohio State defense. Though statistically, it looks great because they're blowing teams out. There is some issue. And Oregon, because they have talent, was able to exploit it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one of their talented players decided to spit in the face of an Ohio State player.
What? Yeah.
And get ejected from the game. But other than that, I mean, it was, I think Oregon came in with the right attitude. And frankly, Autzen Stadium, I don't think I've ever seen it have such a profound effect on a team. I don't know how many false starts and procedural issues that Ohio State had, but it felt like it was a ton.
Yeah, we had someone in the chat say it was absolutely deafening in there. And that was the kind of difference for me. But, you know, Landanning coaching, like, hey, we need to do everything we can to give us every advantage on every possession. And Ohio State sort of playing like their game. Like, we're the better team. We're just going to play our game and plod through, and we're going to end up winning. And Oregon just being like the nimble, like they're – you know, it's like the American Revolution, where like the British are just sort of like lined up in their formations and stuff. And you got the Americans kind of running around doing whatever they need to do. Don't fire till you see the whites of their eyes. Yeah. Like it was kind of a feel like that. Like Landanning did all that. But what you mentioned with Dylan Gabriel, and Ohio State had not been giving up any big plays over the top all season. But I think a lot of that was they just were never tested, and then no one had athletes to test them.
Yeah, Evan Stewart, man. He made himself some money today.
Oregon beat them over the top a lot. And it was like you could even get in third and long situations where any normal team is going to punt. And Oregon's figuring out a way to pick up first downs. But the downfield massive, like the explosive plays that keeps a defense like Ohio State, like not knowing, like a little shell-shocked, you know. And I thought that was the major difference in this game. Besides like the, you know, it was Oregon went for two on that. It was 14-12. Went for two, didn't get it, and then they did the onside kick. And it's like, oh, because you just felt like Ohio State. Well, now they're going to score, and they'll be up like by two scores. But no, you steal that position right there. I mean, that was massive.
Well, and like there was just so many weird things that happened in this game. There was the extra point that was almost returned for 2 points. There was the the early pick that should have been a pick on Will Howard that they didn't review, and Chip Kelly smartly got him up to the line of scrimmage and had him run a play very quickly.
But it should have been an interception.
Should have been an interception because the ball never hit the ground, and one player walked away with it, and that player got the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, de facto, he has the ball. It's an interception. So there was some weird stuff, I think, that went Ohio State's way. There was some weird stuff that went Oregon's way.
Yeah. Everything went back and forth.
It was a weird, fun game. This was, again, a Pac-12 football game.
Hummus Hero, Jim Knowles.
The Pac-12 football games we got this week were Oregon-Ohio State, Illinois-Purdue, and USC-Penn State. Those were all Pac-12 football games.
Which was great to see.
Yes.
Jim Knowles coached not to lose. It's getting old from our Ohio State fan, Hummus Hero. He says the Ohio State defense failed to get any pressure on Gabriel all game. Of course, he was going to pick them apart. It was less picking apart and making big plays downfield.
It was a lot of big plays. I think it was, and yes, I thought Oregon's offensive line played really well. So Oregon's offensive line.
Braylon put that in the chat.
Early in the season, Oregon's offensive line was really struggling. They made a change at center. And that's really helped the pass protection. And yes, Ohio State should have the talent that they should get more pressure on Dylan Gabriel, but it wasn't statistically Oregon's pass protection doesn't look great, but it's really a tale of, you know, two halves of the first half of the season right now.
And this is obviously massive game. People that thought, well, now you're going to expand the playoffs. These kind of games don't matter. They obviously do. If these two teams played tomorrow on a neutral field,
Ohio State would be favored again.
Ohio State would be favored again, and that's fine. But, like, this was such a big result for the Ducks. There was so much riding on it. There's so many people watching for the future of – I mean, two teams that are, like, super teams that, you know, two of the top three NIL budgets in the country, probably.
Yeah.
You know, and putting all that talent that you've paid for and going at it. And, you know, here's our way of doing things. And they don't have the tradition that Ohio State does. But to be able to get that win, I mean, it's such a huge victory for the Ducks. And this is your first year in the Big Ten. And you want, you know, yeah. You were a latecomer. You weren't part of the initial, expansion or whatever. And to make a statement like this, I think it was absolutely massive for the Ducks.
The big difference for me was it was on the road at Autzen, which had an effect. And then it's Ohio State has A-plus talent and a B coach. He's a B. Not bad, but he's a B. And Oregon has A talent and an A-plus coach. And that's the difference.
Yeah. What a game, though. I mean, you couldn't have – the 7 lead changes is crazy. You couldn't ask – and we both got this one wrong, too. Oh, no, you got this one right. Sorry. I got this one wrong. You got this one right.
That's right, baby.
And I kind of felt like as soon as that onside kick happened, I'm like, crap, I'm not going to cover this one.
When you know Lane Danning's coming with the full weight of his beautiful brain, it's a game over.
Yeah.
A game over on the spread. Like, it was going to be a crazy close game no matter
right.
how it happened.
A one-point game, so the spread was going to be thing. Okay, let's do our mythical Pac-12 rankings real quick.
And then did we'll you do them?
I did them.
Okay.
You didn't. I thought you. I asked you to look.
I
at
didn't
them.
Look at them, but they're good.
Okay. We got number 12.
UCLA Bruins.
That's right, baby.
They're kind of ass. Number 11.
Stanford Cardinals.
For a long time, they weren't getting the shit kicked out of them, and then they really did.
Now they're getting the shit kicked
49
out of them.
49-7 against Notre Dame.
Unfortunately, this team's got a ton of injuries, but number 10.
Oregon State Beavers.
Yep, they lost to Nevada on the road, which is about as bad as you can do.
That's like we could drop them, but they have a lot of people injured. But this is not this is not going well over there. Number 9. It's tough to put them here, but
California Golden Bears.
They haven't won an ACC game. And they
could have won.
They came close in this one. They had multiple opportunities late, and they lost 17-15 to Pitt.
Yeah.
Pitt's undefeated? What?
Undefeated Pitt. Yeah.
Undefeated Pitt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not okay.
They feel a little like kind of unlucky too, but whatever. Another unlucky team. Number 8.
USC Trojans.
Plucky, though.
Plucky and unlucky. Number 7.
Washington Huskies.
Not so plucky.
Not as plucky. These all teams are kind of terrible. To be honest, like a lot of these teams are bad.
Yes.
Like our former league is kind of shitty right now. Number 6.
Washington State Cougars.
They won again, right?
Hang on. My thing is updating. Yes, they won at Fresno State. Ethan O'Connor with a pick 6 to seal the deal.
We could have put them higher, maybe. Number 5.
They're 5-1, dude.
I know. Should we put them higher?
Maybe.
Number 5.
Utah Utes.
Okay.
Cam Rising came back.
Rising came back, and then he immediately got hurt again. But
and
he played
was
the rest
terrible.
Of the game.
Should we move them up? Let's move them up above Utah.
Sure. Utah.
Above Arizona?
Yeah. I watched a lot of this game. Arizona State. Can you play Arizona State's music? Because they played too.
Well, we haven't done that yet.
Yeah, but they played number 2.
Oh. Who did?
Utah. Okay. Played number 2.
Okay, let's... We're going to redo this. Hold on. Number 6.
Utah Utes.
They're playing number 2.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
Yeah. ASU won 27 to 19. Speaking of head coaches who are absolutely an advantage on the sideline, first, both of these guys, I love both of these guys for different reasons. Kyle Whittingham, though, the way he has adapted to the way analytics have changed, it's great. He makes good decisions. But Denny Killingham, man, I love that fucking guy. And I'm cursing because at the end of this game, ASU fans rush the field and they're like mobbing him. And you can see the like 10 years ago ASU student come out in old Denny. And he just starts jumping up and down, and he starts cursing with every other word, and he's like all hoarse, and he just like then sort of just melts into the crowd after like a couple of questions. Gotta love that energy. They won 27-19. Cam Rising at the end of this game could not throw a football.
No, it was
sad. It was sad to watch. He needed to be sat before that, and that was a mistake.
Yeah. So we put Utah 6, the 2-5
Arizona Wildcats.
Arizona, they lost again, didn't they? Yeah,
I think so.
They got crushed by BYU. Why are they so high?
I don't know. You could look at these. Just
drop them to like 8.
You want to put them? Okay, let's put.
Arizona can't be high because they're ass. Like Brent Brennan sucks.
Okay,
and he's made this offense terrible. They lost 41-19.
Do you want them?
Noah Fifita looks terrible.
Do you want them below Cal or above Cal?
Below Cal.
Oh wow. Okay.
They're not good.
All right. We're doing this on the fly.
Yeah.
So Arizona down at 9, Cal at 8, USC 7, Washington 6, Utah 5, Washington State 4, or do you want them above Colorado?
No, they can be below Colorado.
Okay. So then number 3.
Colorado Buffalo.
Lost a very close game to K-State.
Yeah. We had 2 Arizona State, and then 1, of course, we got
Oregon Ducks.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We got to get the questions and stuff. Back in a minute, everyone. All righty. We're back here on the Peristyle Podcast.
No, nope.
We're not.
Nope.
We're the podcast of champions. Yeah. I have to record a Peristyle Podcast in like half an hour. Yeah, we got to get to some questions. We got a voicemail. I forgot, Perk, I apologize. I didn't get your voicemail last week, even though I loaded it up. But you left another one, so I'll play this one this week.
Tremendous.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Perk. Apologies if this comes through as a duplicate voicemail. I've left one last week, and I guess it just didn't come through. But over the years and kind of just listening to you guys have mentioned different kind of statistics or different metrics that you guys look for, just kind of evaluating team performance. And so kind of with that in mind, I was curious to know if you guys kind of look at the box score after a game, whether you watched it or not, and you're looking at kind of how the offense, you know, passing and rushing did, and also passing and rushing defense. What are those metrics that you guys look at to say this is how well a team did perform or how they didn't? Just kind of what are the ones that, what are your go-tos that stand out to you? Because, you know, my cable went out Saturday. I have no idea how the Ohio State-Oregon game, how that turned out. And so, you know, just in the event that maybe Ohio State needed just a minute and 50 seconds to get into field goal range, I wanted to know if in that scenario maybe they could have done something or not. Because, again, I have no idea. My cable went out. And then to address the caller or texter that continues to bitch about Ohio State and Cincinnati not playing each other, they've played 6 times since 1999, so pretty frequent stuff. And Brian touched on it last week. It was a slow week for college football. Not a lot of games happened last weekend. So, you know, Dave, I would like to take you up on that offer. You guys probably don't have a lot to talk about this week. Can you expand on why USC and San Diego State don't play more? You guys are probably running out of topics. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Perk.
Thank you, Perk. What was his original question? Oh, what stats do we look at post?
Yeah.
I kind of scanned through the whole thing. Things that, like, I'm trying to figure out. So if I'm trying to figure out a game that I didn't watch, I'm looking at, you know, turnovers. And then, you know, I start with, like, the base stuff, like, you know, who averaged more yards per whatever. And then if that doesn't explain it, I go to turnovers. And if that doesn't explain it, I start to look at the play-by-play. Like, I kind of go deep on it. But games I did watch, it's really just confirmation stuff. But, like, single game statistics, like, if I'm trying to do this for, like, the preview show, I'm not usually looking too much at single games. I'm looking at, you know, kind of the track record for the entire season. So that goes into, like, rushing success rate, passing success rate, points per opportunity, like kind of the lower level advanced statistics stuff that gives you a decent idea of how these teams match up against each other.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking for anything that stands out. You know, oh, that team converted a ton of third downs, or they were 1 of 11 on third downs, or they had, you know, time of possession doesn't mean a lot, but if it's way lopsided and you can kind of look at, well, but they scored three plays of 75 yards or more. You know, there's just kind of things like that. Like I look for sort of like anomalies and anything that looks like, oh, that's very lopsided. You know, but you're not going to, like, if you just looked at the box score, you wouldn't know what happened with the onside kick, you know, and things like that. So, yeah, just try to pick out things that maybe are like, wow, that's a, you know, or this team ran the ball way more than they threw it or anything like that. I try to look at standout stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, we got an email from Croissant Barbu. Rank Purdue, you cowards. Hey, guys. I'd like to formally petition for Purdue to be moved up your rankings and be placed above UCLA. They are. They just scored 49 points against their ranked team, Big Ten juggernaut Illinois, while we just shit the bed and blew a fourth quarter lead to 3-3 unranked Minnesota with less than a minute to go. I think it's time we finally embrace our place as the worst team in the Big Ten. Does he listen to the show? Because we've had UCLA as the worst team all season, basically.
So true.
While you're at it, rank them above USC too, since they also lost to Minnesota, and they lost again this week to small market team from the state of Pennsylvania. Happy Valley doesn't even have an airport. Josh Rosen knew what he was doing when he transferred to Wharton/UPenn. If you don't do it, you're just a coward. You are just as cowardly, I think, as Deshaun Foster on a fourth down decision. Much love from the other side of the Atlantic, Croissant Barbu.
You skipped the Wednesday question.
What was the Wednesday question?
Colleen.
Oh, I thought that was from the day we already did it. Oh, it was late.
It was
okay.
Late.
Sorry. Okay.
That's okay.
We can do that one.
Was this a real question? Was there any real question in here?
They just wanted, we already have UCLA ranked the lowest. Yeah. So okay. Maybe they're being sarcastic about it, but.
All right. This is from Colleen from Wednesday. Huge miss on the week six recap show. On the week six recap show, you both agreed that pianos have stopped falling on Fish's head. I think you missed the last minute or so of the first half where a giant piano fell on his head as he completely bungled the clock management and wasted like 10 to 15 seconds before calling timeout. I just thought you would want an accurate count of piano falls for your Fish stats. Secondly, by the way, it is very much suspected that Coleman is not completely 100% since Fish has alluded that he is on a snap count, and that is really why he is not being used more. Okay.
Okay.
Still, 9 carries. Let's get him some more. Whatever.
You know? Yeah.
Snap count? You're still getting hit in football, right?
Yeah.
What's the count? Why don't you just keep him out then?
Yeah.
What are we doing? And then lastly, feedback for y'all. Ooh. I love the goofy nature of the show and your banter. I know that putting in minimal effort is a hallmark of the show, but I really think you should either give just a tiny bit more effort for the Pac-12 diaspora power rankings or discontinue them entirely. It seems you decide the order just as you were reading them. And then I do have to admit it was a little irritating to beat number 10 and have Washington still be below some of the other teams that were above them. I know it's just a dumb power ranking and it was just Michigan, but still. Thank you, Colleen. Yeah, but then what did Washington do? What did they do, Colleen? Yeah.
Our laziness was like...
Our laziness was prescient.
Yeah. yeah. We don't put a whole lot of effort into those, but we got to... play, you know, pay homage to
our roots.
Yeah, which is that. But we try to, I try to do them, and I missed the Washington State one and how bad Arizona is now. Yeah, because Fafita is playing terrible.
Yeah.
But okay, we'll try to put a little more effort into that. West Texas Mike, the broad screaming over the PA at Bruins games. Can you tell her to cut it out? It's goddamn ear piercing. Though now, as I type this, it does remind me of the meme, why is the cat screaming? If you were smart, you would be screaming too. West Texas Mike. I don't know what he's talking about.
I don't know what he's talking about either. But, I probably wouldn't call her abroad.
Maybe not.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, what's next?
You got Crispy Bruin, I think.
What?
Crispy.
Crispy Bruin. End of season questions. Salutations and commiserations, gentlemen. Now that the football season is over, some questions. You are UCLA's athletic director. If you receive a manila envelope containing Lincoln Riley's remaining contract, do you take him on as UCLA's head football coach? If not, what are some other roles Riley would be better suited for? Now that the football season is over. I don't think you can. I don't think UCLA could take on his remaining contract.
No?
It would be fiscally irresponsible.
Gotcha. Okay.
I think it's fiscally irresponsible that USC has taken on his contract. But, you know, what's money? Question two. In honor of the great one, Mike Leach, which Big Ten mascot wins a Battle Royale Hunger Games style fight to the death?
We haven't got into this much.
We need to get into it.
There's not like a great...
The mascots suck because so many of them are just like people who live there.
I mean, there's a nut. Like, you think a duck is like not going to be that intimidating, but it's, you know...
Like, what are the animal mascots? Ducks, Huskies, we have Wildcats. Bruins, Trojan counts because they got a sword. But a Nebraska Cornhusker, that's just a guy. That's just a person.
Yeah.
Okay? Iowa Hawkeye. Again, I think we're talking just people.
Illini. Yeah, there's like a lot
Illini,
of...
Illini, just people. Indiana, just people.
Question is not as fun.
It's not as fun.
Like, with the Sun Devil with like... We've laser eyes and a trident and stuff. Like, that was cool.
We've got badgers. We've got golden gophers.
Yeah.
We have...
We sort of traded beavers for badgers. They're like, all right.
We have wildcats. We have people who make boilers. We have wolverines. We have Spartans. We have lions, Nittany lions. We have terrapins, which are turtles.
Yeah.
And we have scarlet knights.
A lot of people anyone? There's people with swords. There's kind of smaller, not as intimidating animals. It's just different. Wait, I don't think this works in the Big Ten.
Not as much.
Yeah.
Question three. The Zodiac Killer asks you to help him escape the country after you outed his address to the FBI. Where are you fleeing to? Answers will be judged on if they extradite and quality of life. I mean, Russia would be a choice. Go Venezuela.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably simple to just go to Mexico.
Yeah, just hide in Mexico.
Yeah, I'll be in Cabo fishing until I get caught and killed.
There we go. Keep it mediocre, Crispy Bro.
Thanks, Crispy. Keon in the Bay Area. Wasn't he in like Korea before or something? More logistics talk. Since Dave was so excited to talk about logistics last week, I thought I'd keep the topic going with something I came across a few weeks ago. One of my other interests is airline logistics, and I occasionally go on an aviation forum online. Dave, before you laugh about this concept, I'd like to remind you that at least two of your interests are following where 17-year-olds choose to go to college and interviewing their gym teachers. On this aviation forum, there's an ongoing thread about college football team charter flights. The day before UCLA played Penn State, there was a post in the thread which said, UCLA seems to be flying to State College late Friday afternoon for a game at noon on Saturday. Why on earth would they arrive on Thursday? Wouldn't they arrive on Thursday? Arriving late Friday afternoon for a game at noon on Saturday doesn't seem like the smart thing to do. So there you go. Even the airport nerds have caught on to how unprepared and unserious UCLA football is in all facets. Cheers, Keon in the Bay Area.
That is a very niche interest.
It is very niche interest.
I love that. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem right. You shouldn't do that, but they did.
Yeah.
Go Bruins. all right. What's going on with this one?
I haven't looked at the attachment, but... Maybe just read it. I'll figure it out.
Okay.
This is an international one.
Oregon kicker picking his biatch? Okay. This is Matt from Okinawa. Should fans of the former Pac-12 schools be happy with Oregon's victory over Ohio State considering the other three schools lost? I believe so. Otherwise, we would have heard a cacophony of the Pac-12 schools can't stand up to the physicality of Big Ten schools. Okay. I admit it just gives me a warm and fuzzy thinking a Husky fan is glad Oregon got a W. With that being said, I listened to the Ohio State postgame podcast from 24/7 Sports, and the host just ranted over and over about how the offensive PI call against Jeremiah Smith at the end of the game was ridiculous, and any, quote, unbiased observer would agree. I've also noticed how announcers rave about Smith's one-handed catches, but fail to point out that he uses one hand because his other is busy stiff-arming the defender, which by definition is offensive PI. Would you have thrown the flag as a ref? Watching the Oregon kicker kicking the ball directly into an... Ohio State player reminded me of the kicker from The Waterboy, possibly the best football movie of all time. Oh yeah, there's my bitch. Keep up the subpar work. Wait, is that a compliment or an insult? I want to say it is an insult, but if you shoot under par, isn't that good? Matt from Okinawa.
Ah, good point, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so would I have called the offensive PI? Probably not.
Yeah, probably not.
I thought it was a little ticky-tacky. I think it is, by definition, offensive PI. But I also thought it was ticky-tack. I wouldn't have called it at any point in the game, let alone at that point. That said, given how they managed the clock, I'm not sure they would have managed it any better if it hadn't been called. But yeah, I mean, I think that was significant. I think it did matter.
Yeah, JJ, Matthew in the chat said, this guy's a crybaby. JJ Smith is amazing. He is amazing. I wouldn't say
yeah,
like
he is a lord. And also he's just like physically very strong. Like his body is strong, and for a freshman to look like that and play like that is really impressive. And guys just kind of bounce off of him too, which happens on an offensive PI occasionally too.
Yeah.
But no, I mean,
it's like Shaq getting like, he doesn't get calls cause he's just so big. Like,
yeah, but like, he's not that big, but he's just, his muscles do different things than most of us.
Yeah.
So yeah, his one-handed catches are extremely impressive, and they have very little to do with what he's doing with his off arm.
This is from POC Jock, the POC cross country curse. 10 road team losses amount. I'm sorry, is this like a poem? Okay. 10 road team losses amount as everyone asks, what's that all about? As teams embark on their long flight, they are met with a dismal plight. 'Tis the cross-country curse, a piano-falling plague that brings forth the hearse. Except in Los Angeles, where the curse may be lifted, as the opposing teams a win they are gifted. Hear, hear to USC and UCLA, two teams who've kept the curse mostly at bay. They are our saviors, our knights in shining armor, or one must say, our pig farmer.
Oh. I like that.
Cool. I was like, oh, this is a, I didn't realize it was a poem at first.
Yeah. I mean, it was nice. It was nice. I would say, you know, we gotta tighten up our syllables. We gotta tighten it up because it needs to have good cadence. You know, I would say this one lacked a little bit of cadence.
Okay.
But I would say the rhyming was good. I like the rhyme scheme. I think there's a lot to work with here. So,
right.
POC Jock, excellent work.
Thank you.
Good read.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, thank you to POC Jock, not to me, but yeah.
Yeah, but I was going to. All right. We have Matthew. R. Matthew sent us an email.
Oh, yeah.
With questions. Looking back at Lincoln Riley predictions. Hello, gents. Given all of the current angst about Lincoln Riley, so sad. I was inspired to listen a bit to what the two of you were saying about the hire on the podcast back in December 2021. Dave, you had three main takeaways. One, Ryan was going to be insufferable when USC started dominating again. Well, I think you still will be, eventually, if they do.
If that happens.
I mean, you were borderline insufferable at the beginning of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Two, this was possibly the greatest coaching hire of all time as evaluated at the time of hire. Blue blood poaching a young, super successful coach from another blue blood. I still think that's true.
I mean, that's, yeah, like.
And three, Riley was 90% likely to be successful. But if the 10% scenario happened, it was going to be hilarious. It is.
I love that he went back to 2021 to like.
That's amazing.
God, we can't remember what we said yesterday.
Dave, what say you? How much joy does this summary bring you than being reminded again about what you thought Jaden Daniels would do at LSU? Yeah. This is much better.
That's referring to Dave thought Jaden Daniels wouldn't start at LSU, but he won the Heisman. So
I mean, he was really bad that last year at ASU. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I wasn't wrong.
You weren't wrong. And he's like amazing in the NFL right now, too. Thanks, Matthew. That's funny. USC people get on it too. And like, I know UCLA doesn't have like a great track record of like hiring coaches. And it's not just like, hey, what was Terry Donahue doing when you hired him? Like, what was Pete Carroll doing when you hired him? Like, they became great college head coaches, but they might not have had like some college resume. USC back in the 20s hired Howard Jones, who won a national championship at Yale. In the last 100 years, they haven't hired anyone with anyone close, any near close to the resume that Riley has. And you could argue whether it's bad or good, but just they hadn't hired someone that was a successful college head coach before. They just hadn't done it in 100 years. So, yeah, that's kind of why, like, just on paper, like, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and you know who else had done the same thing in, like, 2017?
Charles Edward Kelly.
Yeah, UCLA did the same thing with Charles Edward Kelly.
Yeah. And how that worked
out. Just an interesting thing to note. Just an interesting note.
He went on to great things, though. Didn't he go, like, become an offensive coordinator somewhere at a really good school?
Hey, you know what? I did an update on the statistics. And through 33 games as the USC head coach, Lincoln Riley is 22-11 now.
Yes.
Clay Helton was 24-9.
Yeah.
Just a little fact.
Yes.
Just a little something. If they continue to lose, that stat is only going to get funnier over the next... three weeks precisely, and then it won't be funny anymore after that.
Because Clay goes like, yeah.
But in the through the end of this season, it's going to be very funny if they lose a lot more games.
Yeah. Clay's record doesn't stand up much longer. But no. Last one. You're going to do it?
I can. Washington. All right. This is from Rob in Seattle.
I think I did the other one, right? Or no?
No, you didn't.
Oh, do you want me to do it?
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's long. I'll do it. Washington is exactly who we thought they were. Hi, guys. Unfortunately, after that gong show in Iowa City on Saturday morning, it turns out that the Huskies are, in fact, a 6-6-ish team. Let's hope so, anyway. My summary up to this point in the season is that this is a team with some solid top-level talent, especially at the skill player positions, but this was the game where UW's lack of depth along the offensive and defensive lines finally reared its ferocious head. I think Husky fans knew this game was coming, but after beating an admittedly mid-Michigan team last week, it seems we were starting to believe that the Huskies' ceiling was as high as 8-4. Well, it's hard to reach your ceiling when the floor falls out from under you by giving up 40 points to Iowa.
Yeah.
Reflecting on how we got here, I want to give credit to the coaching staff for managing to make this team look good at points during the season. It gives one hope when you realize how pieced together by duct tape and spit this roster is. It consists of 50 new players, including a dozen or so quality players from Arizona, a handful of six-year seniors who are the last fumes of the Chris Peterson recruiting era. Mind you that these are the guys who are still here because they weren't good enough to head off to the NFL. And a mixture of true and redshirt freshmen with a handful of cross-your-fingers-and-pray transfers. Let's look at the left tackle position as an example. Starting at left tackle on Saturday was a JC transfer who spent 1 year at Maryland before sitting out all of last season's for very honorable family reasons. He got hurt and left the game during the first series, so his backup went in. A redshirt freshman who was on no one's radar until the offseason and is still recovering from a high ankle sprain. Yikes. Hopefully that paints the picture of the depth situation right now. Anyway, time to swallow our pride and look forward to the future. Recruiting is going well, and baby Belichick seems to have been a surprisingly solid nepotism hire. Boo Oregon and go Dogs, Robin Seattle. I will say that I was expecting Belichick at defensive coordinator to be terrible, and he has not been.
Yeah.
They did allow 40 points to Iowa, but he's been pretty solid.
No, yeah, for sure. Maybe I bought into the hype last week and it looked like they're figuring things out, but you're right. Like, just an injury here or there. Especially, you know, left tackle, offensive line. Like, it's not going to go great. But there's still opportunities here for Jed Fish. Avoid the pianos. Get some good wins. There's some cool games on the schedule. So, we'll see. But this was not very encouraging to go to Iowa and get absolutely pummeled.
Yeah.
By a non-offensive team putting up 40 on you. That's no bueno.
No bueno.
All right. Well, we got to get out of here.
Do we have to?
Yeah, I got to do another show. You want to pose some way?
How do you want to pose?
I don't know. What are you thinking? Thumbs up? All right. We are the Podcast of Champions. David Woods and Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.